So I wonder what you're expecting this Christmas and what your expectations are, which is not as easy a question as you might first think. We're all hoping for something, not just things or jumpers or a new book or presents, but hoping for experiences, hoping for good conversations, for times of laughter, for a sense of well-being, for a sense of or a feeling of being included or belonging, or just for a rest. What we hope for and yet what we expect are different things. Hope is our best wish come true. It's the thing we long for. Expect, well, that's more realistic. It's based on experience, heartache, and disappointment. So we might hope for a certain present from our husband or wife or mother-in-law or child, but what we expect from them may be very different. I'm not sure what my favorite carol is, but I would say O Little Town of Bethlehem is definitely up there. It's not just a great tune, but it's also brilliantly written. It goes like this. O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in the dark street shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. It's those two lines at the end that I love so much. The hopes and fears of all the years. Hopes and fears, these are human things. Our longings and our anxieties. Our dreams and our doubts. And they shape every aspect of our lives, from what decisions we make about what to study when we're young, or about who we try to go out with, to what we do with our time when we're old, and what we feel at the end of the day when our head hits the pillow. Hope, expectation, and sometimes fear. I had the privilege of traveling to Israel in October, and I visited Bethlehem. It's not a great place. It's poor, oppressed, and unloved. The other side of the wall. And this was the place God sent his son to be born, a place filled with hopes and fears still today. So I wonder, what are yours? What are your hopes and what are your fears? If Christmas is about anything and worth celebrating for any reason, it must surely be something about the truth of God coming to the dark streets of our lives and bringing his everlasting light, meeting us exactly where we are, hopeful and fearful. So I have many wonderful memories of our trip, but one seems particularly strong. There was this place called Migdal, just a short walk from where we were staying by the Sea of Galilee. It wasn't always called Migdal. It used to be called Magdala, the home of Mary Magdalene, whose name was given to this church in Reigate. Now, Mary Magdalene's story is interesting enough, but it's not hers that struck me as I walked around the first century synagogue in Migdal, where Jesus almost definitely had been and sat in and taught. It was the story of an older woman who reached out to Jesus. Now, as is the way of things with everything in Israel, wherever Jesus went, we've built a church nearby on top of the key places, so in Bethlehem or Jerusalem or Capernaum. And in Migdal, there's a beautiful and simple new church just by the archaeological site of the synagogue. And downstairs, they've built a synagogue-type space for us to stop in and rest for a while to reflect on the stories around Magdalene. But on the back wall was a large and remarkable painting, a close-up of the moment that this unnamed woman reached out to Jesus to touch the hem of his prayer shawl. And it took us a while to make sense of it all. Why paint such a massive picture of feet? She'd been bleeding for 18 years. Now, bleeding is uncomfortable and painful and energy-sapping. It's also dirty and shameful and socially problematic. It also makes you ritually unclean. So this woman had not just been suffering physically, but also socially and spiritually, unable to participate in her community and in her faith. She lived in the shadows. And as the years went by, although she sought help and advice from doctor after doctor, nothing had worked and her hope had gradually ebbed away. Until she heard about this rabbi called Jesus, And so she set off to reach him, or to reach out to him, out of the shadow in hope and fear of what might happen next. The story is interesting not simply because she's instantly healed of her bleeding at the moment that she touches Jesus' robes, but because of what else happens next. Jesus stops in his tracks, knowing that some power has gone out from him, and he demands to know who touched him. The disciples laugh because the crowd is pressing in on every side, but Jesus is adamant and wants to know. And the woman is pulled out of the shadows and into the light. "It was me," she said. "It was me." Her faith has healed her, but more than that, she's been brought into the light. She is now seen and known and loved, brought face to face with the Creator, the Savior, and so she leaves in peace. In the tender compassion of our God, the dawn from on high shall break upon us, to shine upon those who dwell in darkness and in the shadow of death, and to guide our feet into the way of peace. So Jesus' birth, the incarnation of God, the Word made flesh, is the beginning of the climax of the story, reach of God reaching out to his people again and again. But his birth is just the start of this new chapter of God's love story. It's the foundation of Jesus' life, a life marked by acts of healing and kindness and teaching and prophecy and liberation, and also his death, the battlefield where he took on the enemy and won, taking on our sin and failure and shame, taking its curse and punishment, and defeating the power of sin and death for all creation. This story we sing about this evening is a story of connection, of reaching out, of touch from God to us. And we retell it year after year to remind ourselves that we can, or perhaps we must, reach out to him, to nervously stretch out our hands and touch him, even if we do secretly at first. Because the truth is that we need a savior, a friend, someone to forgive us, to heal us, or to restore the image of God within us that's got distorted over time, or to free us from our addictions or our fears or anxieties, or a king to bring us security and goodness and strength and confidence and peace and wholeness. So this is what Jesus, the child we sing about, offers us again, again, and again. Whoever we are, whatever we are going through, whatever our level of hope or fear, can I encourage you to reach out again to Jesus this Christmas? Push through the crowd, stretch out your hand, and connect with him. Pray to him, receive him. How silently this wondrous gift is given. So God imparts to human hearts the blessings of his heaven. Now we may hear his coming, but in this world of sin, where meek souls will receive him still, the dear Christ enters in. He wants to connect and touch and heal and forgive. So this is the promise of Christmas. It's why we come. It's why we gather. And the last verse of this song is great. And it's a prayer, and we've sung it already. But we can, you can see the words, we can turn this prayer, which is often sung in plural form, singing about us and we, but you can change the words to me and I. O holy child of Bethlehem, descend to me, I pray. Cast out my sin and enter in. Be born to me today. The great glad tiding we hear the Christmas, I hear the Christmas angels sing. The great glad tidings tell. O come to me, abide with me, my Lord Emmanuel. O come to me, Abide with me, my Lord Emmanuel. To help us reflect on this, the choir and the group are going to sing us a song, When I Think Upon Christmas. And as you listen, may you know that God is reaching out to you right now, to your family, to your personal need, to your emptiness and loneliness, to your fears and anxieties. Not the person sitting next to you, but to yours. Reaching out to you in your failure or in your dementia, which is the experience of my mother tonight. Or in your ill health, or your leadership, or in your challenge, or in your work, or in your home. And may you reach out to him and touch the hem of his robes and find healing and freedom, freedom from sin and shame. And may he give you his peace.